Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins, and it's great to have your company. This is a weekly discussion about the Camino de Santiago, a series of pilgrimages across Europe. Pilgrims walk under the blessing of St. James, one of Christ's apostles. The most popular route is what's called the Camino Francés, an almost 800-kilometre or 500-mile walk from St. Jean-Pied-de-Port on the French side of the Pyrenees across the Alps, and then almost right across Spain to the city of Santiago de Compostela. There's a majestic cathedral in the heart of the city which houses St. James's remains. Indeed, Santiago de Compostela translates as St. James under a field of stars. Pilgrims of all ages and races and genders and religions walk together, sharing their journey of discovery. And a pilgrim can expect to meet Swedes and Germans and Brits and Scots and Welsh pilgrims, Americans, Irish pilgrims, Koreans, Kiwis, Australians, French pilgrims, Italian pilgrims, and many others. You'll form friendships with strangers who you'll run into in the most unlikely places. You'll sit and sip coffee in some of the most picturesque places on the planet. And looking out to the horizon from O Sobrero, watching the sunset from the west after a grueling climb to the top of the mountain, then getting up early to watch the sun rise from the east in the morning.
How will I ever forget the Spanish sunrise, the Spanish sunset?
Walking, as I've said here many times, can be a great therapy. The slow movement across the landscape provides an opportunity to delve a little deeper into ourselves, a chance to take the time to be kind to ourselves in much the same manner as we're often kinder to others on the Camino. I haven't actually discovered why we're kinder to others on the Camino, perhaps even kinder than we are at other times in our lives. But perhaps it's as my guest Lindsay Téchiné said a few weeks back. He found the best version of himself walking the Camino. What a wonderful discovery. Perhaps it's the simplest of things. A pilgrimage can provide an opportunity to find a form of peace. That peace may be coming to terms with grief. Actually, as an aside, I read somewhere this week in an article about the Queen, Queen Elizabeth. She said once, "Grief is the price we pay for loving." I thought that was a brilliant insight. Anyway, just thought I'd throw it in there. But it's a lovely sentiment, isn't it? Grief is the price we pay for loving. Back to the pilgrimage in peace. Peace for you might be like Lindsay Téchiné, finding yourself. Or perhaps you walk the Camino to pose a question to yourself. What's next in my life? Should I go back to study? Should I buy that business that I've had an eye on? Finding your own peace. What a blessing. What a miracle. What a journey. What a pilgrimage. There's a great quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese spiritual leader, poet, and peace activist. He said, "The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth, dwelling deeply in the present moment and feeling truly alive." Amen. My guest this week is from the northwest of England, just outside Manchester. Sean Gallagher came up on my radar when someone sent me a link to his YouTube videos. He's on the line. Welcome, Pilgrim.
Well, thank you, Dan, and it's good to be with you this morning.
Yeah, I read on YouTube that you've been walking Caminos for 21 years. How did the Camino come into your life?
Right, well, it came to my life in 1999 when I was 50. That for my 50th birthday, I wanted to do something different. I have done a lot of long-distance walking in England. And there are parts of England which are very good for walking. For my 50th birthday, I wanted to walk on the continent, I suppose, where we maybe guaranteed better weather and just to do something different. So I found the Camino Francés, and I can't honestly remember how I found it. But the motivation for going was really to do a long-distance walk rather than to do a pilgrimage. So I had 5 weeks off work and travelled down to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port with the brother-in-law and my two sons. I've got four children. My two sons, Matthew and Danny, they came with me. And they walked with me for 2 weeks to Burgos. Then they returned home. And then I carried on by myself to Santiago, although a friend did come out, a friend called Keith came out to walk the last week with me. And it was from then that I was really became hooked on it and wanted to do more walking on the Camino. So for the next 21 years from until 2019, I have walked on different routes in the Camino. Not always to Santiago. I've been to Santiago. I've walked into Santiago 4 times. But I've done many walks when I may have just been in France or just been in Portugal and not even got into Spain or even into Galicia. So for about 6 years, it was really just walking on the Camino routes in France. So what I say is that I've done, it depends what you mean, because people say they've walked the Camino. I have walked into Santiago, like I say, on 4 occasions, but for 21 years, I have been walking on the Camino routes, the routes that are available in France, Portugal, Italy, and Spain itself.
So where were you when you turned 50?
I was actually in Burgos.
Right, so that was when your sons were still with you when you turned 50.
They were, right, yeah. I was 50 on the 1st of April, 1999. And my sons and my brother-in-law, Graham, they were with me. So we had a really nice meal outside the cathedral in Burgos. And then they went back home then. I was very lonely, actually, after they left. And for the next 10, 11 days, I was walking by myself. And I did find that difficult at first until I got into it. And then realised, you meet people, you walk people, some people one day, maybe another group another day. But one thing about it then, that I didn't collect the stamps.
Oh.
So I hadn't realised about the Compostela and the credentials. So I did start then to get some stamps in my guidebook. I was using a guidebook from the Confraternity of St. James. And it was only actually when I got into Santiago that there was a German group, and they had a group leader and a guide. And so I just met up with them and was having drinks with them in Santiago itself. And I said I'd explain that I didn't get the Compostela because I didn't have all the information needed. I hadn't been getting the stamps on the way. So this guy, I can't remember his name, but he said, I'll sort that. So we went to the Camino office. I mean, in those days, I suppose there weren't as many people. There weren't big queues like there is now.
Yeah.
At the office, and they knew him very well because he organized groups from somewhere in Germany, and he took me in and he said, I've seen this guy walking on the Camino, for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I can vouch for him, and they let me have the Compostela just on his word.
But oh, wow.
One good thing then about having the Compostela was that, I don't know when it stopped, was that you could actually book, if you book your flight home, and I presume it was to anywhere, then the Spanish airline give you 50% off your ticket to get back home. So I hadn't got a return ticket because we'd actually travelled by train to San Jean-Pied-de-Port, but I flew back then from Santiago. But because I had a Compostela, 50% off, 50% reduction in the price of the flight home.
I didn't know that. That's a great story.
I don't know when. Yeah. I don't know when that stopped.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's the first time I've actually heard of that in more than 200 interviews. But I'll look into that.
See when it stopped. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really interested to get. I want to get to your videos in a moment, but you also do talks about the Camino. Why do you think it's sort of found a resonance with you? You might tell us where you do the talks and what you talk about, but I'm probably more interested in why you sort of think it's sort of become so important to you.
Well, that is, I mean, that is a difficult question. I mean, a lot of people here, my family, they associate like the Camino with me, and I have like Camino shells around the house. I've got one at the front porch, and there's obviously a lot of photographs and around the house of the Camino. So I think it's just become part of my life. And what I tried to do was, so like the first Camino was with, like I say, a brother-in-law and my two sons. So each year that I'm walking, what I do is I tell people what I'm doing, where I'll be, and I say where I'll be each night. And then I give that to family and friends. And most of the time, family or friends are actually walking with me. I do have some weeks by myself, some days by myself. But in general, I've got family or friends who are walking with me. So, I mean, obviously we try and meet up and links with other pilgrims, other people who are walking. But it's also become something where I'm able to share time with my own friends and family.
Yeah. Yeah, how lovely. So tell us about the talks that you do.
Well, this is mainly because of my interest in it. I've got some, PowerPoint slides, some photographs, and just explain to people. So it's probably, I don't know if it's the same with you, but over here there are a lot of small community groups. I mean, there might be parish groups or just groups of walkers or just groups of people who meet and invite different speakers. So it's usually just for an hour or so. So I go along, I just talk about the Camino and answer questions. And quite a few people have actually walked the Camino because of that. And some people have actually walked with myself. They just said, well, when are you going? And I said, well, this is what I'm doing. I think a lot of people are worried about, they don't want to do it by themselves, or they're afraid of making that first step. And I think it's trying to get across to people that, you know, anybody can do it. You know, you can walk as far as you want to walk. You can get your, well, nowadays you can get your bags carried if you want to. You don't need a compass. You don't need maps. You just follow the yellow arrows. The people you meet are always friendly and very willing to offer help. You know, in terms of where's a good place to stay, how difficult the walk is, how far it is to walk in a particular way. It's just so easy to do it. And I mean, even if I don't actually speak any Spanish or French or Portuguese, I'm pretty useless on foreign languages. But I've always got by and never really had any issues.
It's a lot easier these days with Google Translate as well, isn't it? You can always just look it up.
Well, yeah, I do have the mobile phone and the laptop, but I don't use the Google Translate, and I don't use the, you know, a lot of pilgrims now, whereas one time, you know, you see people with guidebooks and GPS. But now it's all these, they've got everything on the phone, so, and I don't use that either, Google Maps. But when I'm with my family, like the last walk I did was with my daughter, in 2019, when she was actually 6 months pregnant, and we did a shortest Camino. We walked we flew to Toulouse, then got a train to Castres, and then walked back into Toulouse, and then back out the other side of Toulouse to Auch. But she was using is it GPS? She was using the phone for directions and everything. I just think you don't really need it, but I suppose it's a good backup. And if you know how to use it, and more increasingly people can use it, then fine.
Yeah. And you're following the red and white stripes in France, aren't you? Not the yellow arrows.
The GR routes. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always quite a lot of quite a lot of shells. I mean, yeah, right. Though in France, the routes do tend to follow the GR routes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have actually walked across France twice. I walked from Geneva down to Le Puy.
Wow.
And then from Le Puy right down to Saint John. And actually, that was in two trips. One trip was Geneva to Le Puy, and then I walked from Le Puy down to Saint John. But it's probably about six weeks walking. I reckon on 100 miles a week. So it's probably about 600 miles. And the other time was from Arles, which is a beautiful city in the south of France, and then walked through the Camargue, and then over into Spain through the Sompor Pass.
I imagine you've probably seen a great deal of change on the Camino in 21 years.
Well, I have. I mean, interesting. That is a good point, because I think the change probably is on the Camino Frances. But so when I did the Camino Frances back in 1999, I mean, obviously since then the numbers have exploded, and unfortunately, I mean, I think too many people focus on the Camino Frances, and you know that there are a lot of other routes to Santiago, a lot of other places that you can walk. But it was a couple of years that the northern route actually joins up with the Camino Frances for the last couple of days, and it was noticeable that as the northern route joined up with the Camino Frances, it was like a motorway, just the sheer number of people. So for the next 2 days, it was just really, I would say, like just throngs of people walking, which is good as well, because, I mean, there's obviously some, when you're walking on some of the routes, I mean, you can go days without actually meeting anybody or without bumping into anybody. I mean, it's one reason why I want to go back and walk the routes up from Seville, because it's a really lovely walk, but it is quieter. You don't meet as many other pilgrims.
I suppose the interesting part about that is that you didn't enjoy walking on your own in that, you know, after your 50th birthday and those first 11 days walking across the Meseta. and yet here you are sort of thinking, where will I walk next? And I might head off. So you don't mind walking on your own now?
Well, I didn't do it, and I have done weeks being walks on myself, but my family, I had an illness in 2014. It was viral encephalitis, it was, and I was basically in a coma for about 11 days. And my family are pretty reluctant. I've got four children, and I think they've come to some sort of agreement now that whenever I go, they'll make sure that one of them is with me.
How lovely.
That is very nice. I think they were worried about me maybe getting ill somewhere when I was by myself, but I don't mind being by myself for walking during the day. But what I really love is in the evening, when you can meet up with other people and enjoy a glass of wine and some nice food. And it is always nice if you've got people there who maybe from other nationalities who you've not met before, and just sharing experiences with them.
Yeah.
And the big difference there is that they're not talking about, if you meet people here, they want to talk about what you did in work or that's, you know, where you live. But people you meet on the Camino, I mean, everything's first name. So you just remember people by the first name. And you don't remember them by what the profession is, what the job is, what they've done in life. It's just more about where they're walking to. You might say, oh, there's such a body, they're walking to Burgos, or there's somebody, they're walking to Salamanca, but they started off. And so you get to remember people in that way rather than anything else about the person.
Yeah. And I think that's fantastic that you can just take them on face value. There's a great sense of ease, because you're able to just say, oh, there's Peter or there's Sean or there's Dan. You know, it doesn't matter what they did. I think that's fantastic. Hey, I want to talk about some of the content that you've produced on the YouTube videos. And you mentioned one of them is about Caminos, I suppose, less traveled. Take us through, how did the YouTube videos come about? And you might just talk about that one where you talk about the Caminos that are perhaps not as popular as others.
Well, the reason was because I had planned to walk in 2020. I had planned to walk, and it was actually one that I'd done before, but there was a group of friends from Porto up to Santiago. Obviously, because of the pandemic, we were going to walk in May 2020. So that was cancelled.
Mm.
So I started looking at YouTube myself. I thought that there was too much focus on the Camino Frances, and maybe also that they were mainly done by younger people. And I thought that some of them were pretty inaccurate, that they were making comments that in some ways I thought were unsafe, really. I mean, I remember on one, in one YouTube, some guy saying that he didn't need to carry any water because you could get it so frequently and so often and with such regularity. Now, that may be true on the Camino Frances now, but I think it's a very dangerous thing to say to somebody. I'd always say you should carry water. And certainly if you're walking on somewhere like the Via de la Plata up from Santiago, up from Seville, when the weather can be very hot, it would be dangerous to walk without carrying at least 2 litres of water. So that's why I decided that I would do some YouTubes, just because I hadn't the opportunity to walk myself. And I thought that I could actually provide some useful information or reasonable information, but also show that somebody of my age, that, you know, the world is not just about young people, that just as we get older, people shouldn't write us off, that we still have a lot to offer. And old people can get on with it and do it. And I think it's good that older people try something new as well. So, I mean, some people sort of laughed at me when I said I was going to do a YouTube. So I think I think it's more or less saying that's for younger people. And so I think it was. I think what I try and do is do something different. And I suppose this change that's going on in the world, if you want to become part of it, and then hopefully stay younger in outlook on life, and obviously hopefully stay fitter as well. So that was the reason for the YouTubes.
So you've presented these videos. One of them, as I said, was about Caminos less traveled. Tell us about the Seville Camino. What's it called, and how far is it, and where do you stay?
Well, it's called the Via de la Plata.
Mm.
And it's an old Roman road, and it was originally, Seville was a port, and it's not, obviously not now, I think the port is now Cadiz. But the Romans, what they used to do is they would be in Seville, and they then marched north to Astoria, where all the mines are. So they'd mine all the minerals in northern Spain, and then go back down the Roman road, back down to Seville, and obviously before then returning to Rome. So before it was a pilgrimage route, it was a Roman road. So all along the route, you got these Roman mileposts with a Roman mile. And there are a lot of towns which have very strong Roman connections. And there's one that I'd never heard of before. And it's just gone from my mind now. I'll remember it in a minute or so. It's actually where the Roman centurions were buried, because obviously a lot of Spanish joined the Roman army. Spain was part of the Roman Empire, and so all along the Roman road, you can see there are cities and towns which have got Roman connections. And probably along that route is probably, for me, is one of the most attractive city on the Camino, which is Salamanca.
Mm.
So it took me 2 years to, if you want to get to Santiago, but I walked, 1 year I walked from Seville up to Zamora, so I passed through Salamanca. But I enjoyed Salamanca so much that when the following year I went back, I got the train from Madrid to Salamanca, and I stayed a couple of nights in Salamanca before starting the Camino again, and then walking on from Salamanca up through Orense and over to Santiago. But the accommodation is not, it won't be as frequent as on the Camino Francés. So, and some of the distances between places may be a little bit longer. And because sometimes you are, there's nowhere during the day to buy a drink or have a coffee, what you've got to do is make sure that you plan your walk each day about where you will be able to stop and where you'll be able to buy some food. So that's where I think the guidebooks and are very useful and very informative. I suppose one reason, again, why I do talks and why I've done the YouTube is because I'm not a very good writer. People who are good at writing, you know, let them write. I suppose I would say that, well, family say I'm better at, you know, well, even now, I suppose I'm rambling on a little bit, I'm okay talking. So stick to what comes easier.
In another video, you talk about 9 problems on the Camino. I don't want to talk about all of them because we want people to go and have a look at your video, but you talk about poor planning. Now, I've talked here before many times about spreadsheet pilgrims, and I kind of wonder about pilgrims who plot every day and every step and everywhere they're going to be. Now, I understand on the Camino Via de Plata that you're going to want to know exactly where you're going to go so that you can, as you say, plan it. But you say poor planning can be a problem on the Camino.
Well, I think that's it. Using that Via de la Plata as an example, that if you just leave your accommodation in the morning, you've got 25K to walk, and after a few K, you realise there are no shops on your route, there are no bars, there's nowhere to get a coffee, that you've nowhere you can get any water. So I think it's maybe that aspect of it, that you're just looking at what the terrain is going to be like. Will there be places that you can stop and have some food? So when I say, I don't mean to over plan it. And again, I suppose one of the reasons why I say where I'm going to be each night is because if family or friends are joining me. So if I'm walking for 4 weeks, somebody might say, well, I'll join you for this week. So I need to tell that person where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
But if I wasn't doing that, then it could be more of a free spirit and just walk as far as I want to walk that day, and then stay. And if I find a nice place to stay there then. But where I've usually been in a position where I'm meeting other people, so I do need to be clear about where I'm going to stay.
Is it always easy for your family or friends to find you? I mean, sometimes you're in little tiny towns. How are they going to get there to meet you?
We've not had any mishaps up to now, and because I'm saying exactly where I'm going to be, I suppose they've got to do a little bit of planning. They've got to look at where I'm going to be and whether it's on a rail route, whether it's on a train route, a bus route, how far it is from an airport. And then, sometimes it may well be that they've got a little bit of a journey as well, that they might fly somewhere, then have to get a train,
right. Then
get a bus, then get a taxi. But what they usually do is usually meet up with people it's usually like in the evening. So I'm walking into a particular town, and they've got to try and get there knowing that I'm not going to hang around there, I'm going to stay there the night and then walk on the next day. And I've just remembered the old Roman town on the Via della Plata. It's called Merida. And it's a fascinating town because when you actually walk into it, it is honestly like walking into Rome. There's so much Roman architecture, amphitheatres, statues. And this was the home of the Roman centurions. That's where they retired to. So I just throw that in because I've forgotten it earlier.
Yeah, how fantastic.
Merida, yeah.
You say in another video that the Camino never ends.
Right. Well, the story behind that was I was walking in France with two of my kids, a son and a daughter, and we could smell the tobacco, if you want, in front of us. So we knew there was somebody up front having a smoke on the journey. And we were in a wood, a forest. And then we came across this guy who was sat down in front of a tree having a smoke. So we got chatting to him, again, like the usual talk about where we were going to, where we'd started off and where else we'd walked on the Camino. And this chap was called, it was a French guy called David. And it was him who came out with this quote. He said to us, the Camino never ends. And that's, if you want, that's where it started from that. So in our family, and we say that quite a lot, the Camino never ends. And I suppose what a good example of it is obviously now is with the pandemic, that the numbers in 2019, I think, were something like 347,000. And they've gone down to over 50,000 in 2020. But I still find it remarkable that 50,000 people managed to get to Santiago in 2020. I mean, obviously, a lot of them Spanish. But I think it's just saying that the Camino bounces back from, like, say, the Spanish Civil War, from pandemics, from the Protestant Reformation, from wars in Europe. And the Camino still with us. And I think it's for that for ourselves as well. Again, it's likening the Camino to a journey that we might have good years, bad years, but keep, you know, that our own personal Camino doesn't end.
Yeah. And you take a bit of it home with you too, don't you?
You do take it home with you. And I think I like the thing that it becomes part of your life as well, that people become, like, I think what you... like this kindness, this and not being too that interested in what people in people's profession, in where people work, and I mean, it tends to, I mean, probably in England in particular, seem pretty judgmental based on what people do in life, so what size car they have and where the house is. Whereas I think it's more about thinking about the person themselves, trying to get to know people. So it does become a bit of a... And I think another thing that I like from it is this thing about the eating, when it's nice to eat... maybe in England we moved away somewhere from eating around a table and eating together.
Mm.
And I think that a lovely part about the Camino is that, you know, that you've walked all day and... you then have a shower and then meet up with in the albergue or in a local restaurant and eat together. So I think there are those parts. And for me, another part was this about, well, on the Camino, so I never watch any TV or never read a newspaper. So I think, you know, at home, again, it's trying maybe to watch less TV, don't read as much rubbish, and maybe talk to people more than that. Unfortunately now, I mean, a lot of young people over here, they've got the phone in the hand. So I've got three grandchildren, and they've all got these little gadgets and looking at TikTok. And I try and encourage them to...
put them to one side and have a chat instead.
Yeah, good on you. I think that's fantastic. Another one of your videos deals with pilgrims versus tourists. And I read somewhere a quote, and I'd kept it sort of in my files for this very day perhaps. It said, "A tourist gets tired and tanned, while a pilgrim sparkles with spirit." Isn't that great?
It is, yeah. I think people, though, I mean, obviously the first people to walk the Camino were all pilgrims. Well, I mean, when it started in 850, people were not tourists, they were all pilgrims. So I suppose it's more recent that maybe since the 1980s that people could be regarded as tourists. But I think a lot of people who start as tourists, and I was probably a tourist, or it was an adventure, you know, like the thrill of doing a long distance walk. And I suppose it's that people gradually, maybe people over time become pilgrims, yeah. And in their outlook, and the spirituality of the therapy, as you say, maybe they become more important. So I think what I was saying, in one way, it wasn't that good a title, because it's not pilgrims v tourists, is it? No, I think it's this change that it was pilgrim, then it has become more touristy. And a lot of people are a bit sniffy about that. Maybe older people to younger people, the fact that younger people maybe not respecting it as much, that maybe, I don't know, maybe they drink too much, whatever. They see it more as a pleasure. But I think it's, for me, the more people that walk the Camino, the better, because I think the Camino brings out good in people. And I think the point that you were saying about bringing the Camino home with you is a good one as well. The more you learn about people from other countries, and the more you mix with other people from other countries, obviously the more you realise that we're all the same. And there's a danger, isn't there? I mean, certainly a danger now in this country, because we've left the EU, that people become more insular and not as welcoming to people from other countries, from other backgrounds. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the great pleasures is just that meeting people from Australia, meeting people from Canada, meeting people, well, you say from Mexico, from all over the world, you meet different people.
I know a lot of Brits were hoping to get to the Camino this year. Indeed, a lot of Australians are now thinking it could be 2 or maybe even 3 years before we are able to travel overseas. What's the situation now for you in the UK?
Well, one of the things where we've been very lucky is that the vaccine rollout in this country has been excellent. So I've actually had... I've had the vaccine now. I've had the two injections, and so that does give you a lot of safety. And we can travel from May the 17th.
Right.
At the moment, we're not allowed to leave the country before May the 17th. But after May the 17th, then travel is opened up. Now, it obviously depends on whether Spain or Portugal, you know, whether they're welcoming people. But I've booked flights from Manchester to Madrid on August the 16th. So if all's well, then I will fly to Madrid in August and then go make my way to Ferrol and do a short Camino, a 6-day Camino on what's called the English way. But I suppose, that's one of the benefits, I suppose, of living in Europe or in England, that you can actually book these, and also the flights are not that expensive. Obviously, making a trip from Australia, maybe more of a once in a lifetime visit. So it may be better to wait until things are a bit better, a bit clearer.
Yeah, and certainly a bit more assured, because you don't want to spend all that money and then be told that you can't go. And things are changing all the time.
That's right.
But I imagine there are some beautiful walks in your neck of the woods in northwest England, yeah?
There are, yeah. Very underrated. And I think, parts of the northwest of England, what we call the Lake District, A really beautiful area for walking in. And I'm just planning to do a walk now in, I think it's May the 10th, a walk up at one of the highest mountains in England, which is called Helvellyn, which is in the English Lake District. So, I mean, I'd certainly recommend the Lake District in England for if people wanted to come to England. You know, they might not be aware of some of the lovely walking that we do have over here.
Yeah, I'd love to do the top to the bottom of Britain. I'd love to do that big long walk.
I've read where people have done that. I mean, the one that I have done is the what's called a coast to coast. So I've walked from starting in on the west coast in what's called St. Bees. And then walking across, and it's about 200 miles across to what's called Robin Hood Bay or Whitby. And that's about two weeks walking. And that is a fantastic walk because you walk through the English Lake District and you walk over the Pennines and then into the Yorkshire Moor. So if anybody is thinking about like a long distance walk in England, then I'd recommend it's just called a coast to coast. Walk, and if you Google coast to coast, you'll find lots of information on it.
Where do you stay?
Well, there's you can stay. I probably stay in some, when I first did it, I stayed in youth hostels.
Oh,
well, a lot of the youth hostels now have been sold off. So it could be a mixture of youth hostels and small hotels. And I don't mean big hotels. I mean, you know, like small hostels. So again, I suppose it's like the Camino in northern Spain. Is that lots of accommodation has grown up around the routes. So a lot of people, because so many people were doing the walk, people have provided accommodation. But there are companies again in. Which may be easier for somebody from a distance and not being familiar with the area. There are companies who will book the accommodation for you, and people again, like similar like to the Camino, and companies who will carry your baggage as well. It is actually it's tougher walking than walking on the Camino, like the English Lake District. I know they're probably only about 1,000 meter high, the highest fells, but you won't be able to walk as far as say you can do on the Camino. So you've got to be better prepared for the terrain, and you would need walking boots. Whereas I think a lot of the Camino routes you don't need boots. You can manage with trainer type footwear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I'd certainly say to anybody if they're only a couple of weeks walking in England, then the coast to coast. Is good, and a lot of these firms will arrange your accommodation for you.
Oh, sounds fantastic. It's great to talk to you, Sean, and I'll tell my listeners where they can find you as we finish. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you, and I hope our paths cross one day. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Buen camino.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dan, and good luck, everybody.
Buen camino.
When can you mean no?
My guest this week was Sean Gallagher. Sean has a collection of videos on YouTube. It's as easy as Googling Sean Gallagher Camino and they'll come up. We're slowly but surely emerging from the pandemic crisis. You and I can feel the freedom looming, as they say. It'll be an opportunity like no other. Imagine the joy of finally getting back to the Camino. It'll be joy on another level. Taking the opportunity to have a good look at ourselves. A chance for slow reflection, finding peace. What a blessing. What a miracle. What a journey. What a pilgrimage. There's a great quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese spiritual leader, poet, and peace activist. He said, "The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth, dwelling deeply in the present moment and feeling truly alive." I hope this blessing, such as it is, finds you in full bloom. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen camino.
Somewhere along the way, somewhere